Sorry we're late this morning, and had some meetings in the building, but hope we can get back on track and use the same skills we used yesterday in dispensing with many, many pieces of legislation. First, we have HB 249 referring to the enhanced 911 surcharges, which we heard several times in this committee from another, from the Senate bill. Representative Hocker.
Thank you, ma'am, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Mike Hocker, District 32, Anchorage. And yes, ma'am, as you mentioned, this bill is an old friend of this committee. It has previously been heard here as it was introduced and carried on outside of the building by Senator Bundy. In that Senator Bundy's complications and absence at the end of session here, we had met together and he had said, work with the members of your side, members of our side, and move either the senator's version of the bill or our companion bill. Our companion bill, which is truly in true recognition of Senator Bundy's yeoman work over here that it's brought to you. Minor changes coming through the House that are incorporated in the House version. Technical nit section, I believe it's section 4, the multi-line systems, just the technology has been changed. The word has been changed from telecommunications to telephone. That's a technical request. In that same section, the word E-911 has been changed to the full word enhanced 911. The item of substance in the bill that did change from the one you've seen before was that we in the House did come back with the bill that was in Senator Bundy's original bill with a $2 cap rather than the $1.50 cap, ma'am.
Are there any questions? Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on this bill? Oh, I do have one person on off-net. Tim Rogers, if you'd give your name and who you represent, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tim Rogers, and I represent the Alaska Municipal League, and I've testified on this before. I just want to let you know that I do support the amendment that came across from the other side, and would be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Rogers? Seeing none, thank you, Tim, for calling in again.
Thank you.
Like I said, we have had this over a period of a couple of months, heard this repeatedly, and got lots of work done on it, and then Representative Hocker, in carrying it on the House, incorporated much of the language we had already done, except they did want to go back to the $2 cap, and the updating the phrase telephone and enhanced 911, which I think is a great improvement. And so with that, Senator Wilkin, could we get a motion, please?
Well, Madam Chair, if we could. I have an issue with the bill, and I'd like to propose an amendment, if I could, please. And I'm sorry, I would have had this done earlier. I didn't realize we were going to jump on this morning. But while the amendment's being copied, this has been a big issue in my town, as you well know, Mike. We've worked through this, and I really can't help them much with the cap issue. $2 doesn't help them, and they're going to have to adjust the way they do things. But having said that, the issue that really concerns me and concerns them, and I think they give us a very good scenario. What this bill asks is that if the requirements of E-911 in a municipality need to be increased, the services need to be increased, and that requires an increase in the assessment, increase in the amount put on the phone bill, that be done through a public vote. And that all sounds all well and good, except you walk through this scenario, and I think it's a good scenario, and the amendment removes the requirement for a public vote and puts it instead on the borough assembly. Here's the scenario. We have assembly elections every year, and every 3 years we have mayors. Certainly mayors and even assembly, just for the seats, they can become expensive events. They can become events that the whole community pays attention to. There's fundraisers, there's advertising. It becomes the focus, as it should be, to elect the leaders. Now what we're putting in place is, let's just say we need to do a 911. We have a 911 problem. We need to increase the rate. My municipality, I think others, are not able to use their own money to promote to what they consider to be a worthy initiative in front of the people. So what we have is a small group of people that are going to go out and try to raise money for E911 to try to compete with the elections for mayors or assembly people. And what happens is that they're going to be lost in the noise. And so what we really are doing here is we're going to make it very difficult to provide the right services and ask the people to vote. Because many people, I'm not being one of them, but many people have not had the advantage of 911 service. And until you're able to call and have that service available, you probably aren't a true believer, at least to the point where you want to raise your rates.
You want to move the amendment?
Oh, yes. And so the amendment, Representative Hocker, the amendment for the body removes the issue of the surcharge being approved by voters and instead puts it on the municipality and the assembly. And with that, Madam Chair, I move amendment number one. And all of that was the preface to why I think this is a good amendment. I frankly think that the effort here shortchanges E911, and I don't think that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make it more responsive. We're trying to make it more of a public safety issue. So the people like I did, once in my life had to call E911, those people were there. And I'm a firm believer. And I'd be one that would write a check for $100. And I'd be one that would vote for it. But I'm one of a few, one of 10 that's had the service. But it's available to all 10.
I object.
So with that, that is the amendment. And with that, Madam Chair,
I think we've long had, you know, a cap in statute that was probably the minimal that could be allowed. And what we've put into statute will, for most districts, that are the larger size districts, will quadruple that rate from $50 to $2. And in the MATSU, we were already allowed 75 cents. And I don't know what Juneau is. If they're 75 or 50 cents by population, they're probably 50 cents. Or maybe the class of the city as well, the organization class of the city. But I think we give a lot of... It's interesting how the blame in this particular thing goes down and goes up, because we're going to be blamed for even what we're doing, allowing it to go up to $2. Then we're passing on that blame to our local telephone utility, who's then going to get blistered when they have no say in this, and then they're suddenly billing their members an additional triplicate fee, and then they have to explain, oh, this was not the telephone company, this was the borough, or this was the city. And then the city comes back and says, oh, the state allowed us to do this. Talk to your legislator. Well, I'm willing to be talked to up to $2. I mean, I'll accept the amendment back to $2. But over that, I think if that group of people wants it and needs it, they need to go to a vote. And I continue my objection. Does anyone else have any comments? Senator Olson.
I'd like to know what the sponsor thinks of the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Through the chair, Senator Olson. We've had this debate in my own office, and I sincerely believe there are equally sound arguments behind either position being proposed here, and I quite frankly I'd be very happy to take either position back to the body of the House. I tend to come from a personal philosophy of having decisions made as close to those affected by them as possible. So the actual vote of the citizenry in this case is certainly acceptable, a very, very sound argument. Then the question sometimes when having a plebiscite on measures that are public revenue raising, sometimes you get voters acting in their own best interest rather than the interest of the community as a whole. So again, there's sound arguments on both sides, and Madam, I have no position on the amendment.
That was a truly political. Well, that fence is wide. Okay, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I think Senator Ogden used to call those, they were historically called mugwumps. Mug on one side of the fence and a wump on the other. This is a case where I happen to agree with Senator Wilken. I served 6 years on the local borough's assembly, municipal assembly. And one of the traditions in the Western democracies of electing, hopefully, the gray hair, or in my case, the bald-headed elders of the tribe to take the time to study the issues and make the decisions. And I agree with Senator Wilken that this one is best made by that, the elected body. And the Senate seat that I sit in at one time was, at least portions of it, occupied by Sam Cotton. And I heard Senator say several times in public meetings when people would say, well, you're going to vote the way we want you to. And Sam says, you know, most of these issues are very complicated and take a lot of study. And he said, well, at the end of the day, I hope that I vote the way you would have wanted to vote, or if you'd have had access to the information and the debate and the history of the issue, like I have a chance to study. And so that's why we have a representative democracy, is because we pick out hopefully mature and wise people to make the decision after they've had time to study the issues and hear the rigorous debate. So I'm going to support the amendment.
I think that's kind of interesting, Senator Dyson, because you've certainly been a proponent of sound budgeting and, you know, and watching where we spend and increases and everything. And I think this flies directly in the face of the tax cap that the city of Anchorage and others have. And this is simply a mechanism by which they can get around that tax cap. And that bothers me. Yeah. And until they change that limitation, we shouldn't be providing them an avenue in which to go around that tax cap.
Yep.
And one of the things that happens, particularly with the E-91, the enhanced 911 whole system, is I imagine you could poll or talk to people all over your district and find very few people who know what that system consists of, what it means, and I think that's huge education thing. Not that we're that much better informed, but we certainly have discussed it here and have seen what can happen with the 50 cents and the 75 cents. And I think the language provided in the legislation that really lines out and very clearly elucidates how this money can be used makes major changes on the needs versus the wants. And I maintain my objection. Senator Hoffman, you have the amendment there in front of you?
I do.
Okay. Anyone else have any comments on the amendment? Senator Olson.
Madam Chairman, I guess one of the difficulties I have with the amendment is that the municipality, if they should run short on funding, is going to have a much easier time to go ahead and tap into that than they would otherwise. Mm-hmm.
That's what I would. Yeah, I would agree. So.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Comment? Okay. Senator Dyson.
I just I respond to your comments. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the real or apparent hypocrisy of my position on this, and I often run into issues where my principles are in conflict. And I'm very cognizant of the leadership of the Anchorage municipality doing great maneuvers to get around their tax cap rather than facing it honestly. And I appreciate being reminded that this is enables their end run around that issue, and I don't want to give them comfort on end running their tax cap, which was very well crafted. And but indeed, I think the significance of the issue and the principle of representative government in this case overrides that for me. But I have what my wife calls cognitive dissonance, as the chair has pointed out.
Your wife made that observation. Okay, any other comments? Please call the roll.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Smith?
No.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Dyson?
Yes.
Senator Wilkins?
Yes.
Senator Green?
No.
Two yea, four nay.
So amendment number one fails to be adopted. Will you still make the motion to move it out of committee?
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 249 from Committee with Individual Recommendations and attach this one up.
Thank you very much. Without objection, House Bill 249 moves out of committee with individual recommendation and attach fiscal notes.
Madam Chair and Committee, thank you very kindly.
Thank you very much. See you on the floor. Is Representative Samuels coming back? Yeah, really good. Thank you. Okay. We'll take up 150, House Bill 155, having to do with youth courts and criminal fines. Briefities. House Bill 155.
Thank you, Madam Chair. HB 155, simply, for the record, I'm Ralph Samuels, representative from District 29. HB 155 simply gives the legislature the authority to appropriate up to 25% of the fines collected by the court system to the youth courts. It does not stipulate that they do so. The youth courts help young offenders by intervening early and set them on the right track and work to deter them from becoming adult offenders. The Anchorage Youth Court in Alaska is the oldest of the programs, established in 1989. In the first two quarters of the current fiscal year, there have been almost 500 youth offenders referred to these programs and almost 9,000 hours of community service ordered. There are 14 youth courts statewide: Anchorage, Delta Junction, Fairbanks, Homer, Juneau, Cake, Kenai, Ketchikan, Kodiak, Kotzebue, the Mat-Sue, Nome, Sitka, and Wrangell all have operating youth courts. The bill is a simple accounting mechanism which would allow the legislature to give the courts the money. Well before I got into politics, I sat on the board of directors at the Anchorage Youth Court, and discovering how the system works, a lot of the shoplifters and the low-level crimes that the police would find and basically return to their parents, the reality is that they would get a letter a couple months later saying, don't do this again. McLaughlin was too overwhelmed to do something about it, as was the court system. So really nothing happened but a letter going to the youthful offender. And what this does, I mean, anybody that knows a 14 or 15-year-old kid knows that 3 months is a lifetime, and there's really no consequence there just saying you don't do it. The youth courts have the peers themselves are the ones that are the judges, the jury. I think that it's probably a lot tougher to blow smoke at your people your own age group than sometimes it is at a bunch of adults. And this provides a lot more immediacy to some of these lower-level crimes. Mr. Wolliver, with the court system, drafted Sections 3 and 4 to address some of the concerns the court system had with their estimates and the accounting. And I said, thank you very much for hearing the bill online or in the audience. I know Doug Wolliver and Patty Ware from the Division of Juvenile Justice is here. Doug Wolliver from the court system is here, and I believe Jonathan Lack is online also.
Okay, Representative Samuels, if this bill, as of now, when collections are made from fines, where does the money go?
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
Division of Juvenile, right now they cannot receive any fines. The youth courts cannot. Where they actually go, I would defer to Mr. Walter.
Now who's moving back in the line? That's what I want to figure out. Where does the loss occur? Is it general fund? Is it court maintenance? Is it another program? Or is it... Because it's not more money, it's just changing places. Who's here? Go ahead.
Madam Chair, the money goes into the general fund, but the bill doesn't stipulate where in line you would put youth courts. You would just put them in the hopper somewhere saying we can allocate money to these things. Simply an accounting mechanism for the current time.
Okay, so in line five, fines imposed and collected under this section shall be separately accounted for under, that's not, is that a general account reference, or anyone here that can answer that? Doug, can you answer that?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Don't we love our help? Welcome, Doug.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Wolliver. I'm the administrative attorney for the Alaska court system. That statute is simply the statute that directs an entity to separately account for specific types of money. In this case, it directs the court system to say, specifically identify, these are fines that we've collected, as opposed to fines and forfeitures or court costs or anything else. It's just a label that we put on the funds in the general.
Did you introduce yourself for the record? Okay, thank you. I'm obviously reading this too much. Okay, in the past, I think we've had the discussion here before with the concern about fines collected for certain things, and there was never the connection from the fine collection to the payment to the recipient. And I don't know, they may have been different type fines, whatever, and it's, I don't know if it was an accounting, a payroll, a computer glitch, or what kept the funds from moving on. What would change that would make this fall into a system whereby the funds would be made available for appropriation?
Madam Chairman, with this, the disconnect sometimes is between the court system and the collections division of the Department of Law, but this bill doesn't address that. This bill simply says the money that we collect ourselves, which we know what we're collecting, is specifically accounted for. It does not take in the money that the Department of Law might collect over the years through attachments to the dividend or any of those things. We know how much money we bring in each year. Mm-hmm. It goes into the general fund, and that's the dollar amount that you'll look at under this bill. So we don't have that disconnect with the Department of Law Collections Division.
So we're pre-authorizing by this legislation a quarter of the money you take in is going to go to fund youth courts.
My understanding is at least it authorizes you to do that. The bill does is it just...
It's the may appropriate is the allowable.
Right.
Could we do that without this bill?
You would need, I believe, to set up something. You could do it all at one time if you chose to appropriate.
Okay, Senator Stedman.
Yes, Madam Chair, I was just kind of curious. You know, certainly the operative word here is may, but for the last 3 years or 5 years, what is 25% of the fines collected? And
fiscal note one. Through the chair, Senator Stedman. Last year, the court system collected roughly $3.5 million in fines. So it would be 25% of that, which I think is 75 or so.
Say it again.
Last year, we collected roughly $3.5 million in fines. So it would be 25% of $3.5 million.
Senator Wilkin.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. That number surprises me because I'm looking at fiscal note one, and that seems to say to us that there was 1.2 collected, and so therefore it would be about $324,800. So, but that leads me to my question. It seems like Representative Samuels, and I think Senator Green is right, we can do this whether we have this legislation or not, and this just sets up a mechanism. But it seems like there should be a word in there in line 9 that says up to 25%. Because the way it sits now is you either do zero or you do 25. And let's just say they had a big year and they collected $6 million, and the youth courts, it's sort of like this, the permanent fund thing where we grow the program because the permanent fund goes up, and then when the permanent fund check starts going down, the program squeaks because the money isn't available. So I'm a big supporter of youth courts, but I think we need some discretion, just like we do today with the legislature, that we can fund it at an appropriate level depending on what they're requesting. And So with that, Madam Chair, I will offer a conceptual amendment. Line 9, the words up to precede the word, or the number 25%.
Is there objection to the conceptual amendment by Senator Wilkin? Amendment number 1 is adopted. Conceptual amendment number 1 is adopted.
Thank you.
I will tell you, we have to get to the floor, and we probably need to talk. And we will begin Senate Finance as soon after floor adjourns and the members have had a chance to stop by, pick up a bite, and we'll be back here at the table. And we'll try to give a little bit of notice, but we'll be able to better judge by the time we leave the floor. And I think there could be some lengthy discussions today, so it may go a ways. But if you can make yourself available for the meeting this afternoon, that would be fine. And yes, Senator Dyson.
So you want us to meet right after session, and would it be helpful if I delayed the start of Senate Hess?
It might be. Is your Hess meeting going to go very long? Can you get that done in at the end of your normal schedule, right before resources?
Yes, I think so. I think I'll check with my aide.
Okay,
I think we can
okay.
do it in an hour. So that would give us till 2:30.
Okay, and then hopefully we'll get through these and pick up some of those that we had before us previously. And then if we have to come back tonight, we have lots of conflicts this afternoon that get in the way because there's a teleconference scheduled. And yes, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say we have a subcommittee on university lands tonight.
I think that's what I meant to say. Yeah, subcommittee. All right. So with that, we will be at ease until you receive notice or you observe us getting back here. Thank you. And until we get a quorum, we'll go ahead and begin the testimony on HB 131.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan.
There's a big bouquet of flowers in front of me, and I can't see. just kidding.
Staff Representative Bill Stoltz. Access ID theft is growing at a tremendous rate nationwide. In the past few years, it's grown over 152% in the nation. Right now, Alaska ranks second for the number of complaints per capita for access ID theft. Recognizing this increase, House Bill 131 will increase the criminal classification of a theft of an access device, of the fraudulent use of an access device, and for fraudulently obtaining an access device. It'll go from a misdemeanor to a Class C felony. If there are any questions.
Any questions? Did you have something you wanted to offer?
For the record, my name is Randy Ruaro. I'm an attorney of the Department of Law, just that the Criminal Division and the Department of Law supports the bill and agree with, you know, Ben's opening statement.
And is there a definition section, or do we know what this device is?
Through the chair, Senator Green, I do have in 1181-900 is the definition section. Which definition in particular were you?
Access device.
It is right here. If you'd like, I can read that for you.
Thank you, please.
Access device means a card, credit card, plate code, account number, algorithm or identification number, including a social security number, electronic serial number, or password that is capable of being used alone or in conjunction with another access device or identification document to obtain property or services, or can be used to initiate a transfer of property.
No, we're on 131. House Bill 131, Senator Stedman. Is this something that's kind of going around the nation? Are we seeing the heightened penalty for some of these actions?
There are quite a few other states, and I don't have them on me right now. I can get that. But they have even lowered their penalty in the monetary value from a traditional price for a felony to a lower amount, or have knocked it off the price altogether. It seems to be a trend because, I mean, nationwide, when you have an increase over 100%, it kind of grows into an epidemic.
Okay. Any questions of the sponsor? Is there anyone else to testify on this bill? Senator Wilkin. You want to?
Madam Chair, I move to report House Bill 131 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Thank you very much.
There being no objection, House Bill 131 is moved out of committee. On House Bill 197, which is oil spill exemptions for gas wells.
Greetings again, members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Vic Coring. I represent House District 14. Thank you very much for hearing this legislation. I appreciate it. This is on behalf of the House Bill and Gas Committee, House Bill 197. It's a relatively straightforward bill. It basically exempts oil companies who are drilling strictly for gas from what are called C plans. C plans are oil spill contingency plans. I assume we're doing 197. I didn't actually hear that number, but the way it was described, I assume that was my bill. Anyway, the way the state law is written right now, a company that is drilling strictly for gas and is drilling in formations that contain only gas are still required to have oil spill contingency plans. And the problem with that is that they're very expensive, they're very time-consuming, a lot of paperwork involved. Typically, it would take about 6 months to acquire from the state. Had a lot of expense as well, so it just seems logical to exempt gas drillers from having to have the oil spill contingency plans. So this provides that exemption. The Oil and Gas Conservation Commission would make the determination as to whether formations contain oil, and if they do not contain oil, then they would allow that exemption to be given to the applicant. So that's basically the legislation. Has a zero fiscal note. It is supported by the administration. I have typically had Larry Dietrich from DEC to accompany me with my testimonies to provide any answers to technical questions. He is unable to be here at the moment. He's in a meeting, and he was supposed to have been here any minute. So I'm a little bit at a disadvantage with him not being here, but I'd be happy to attempt to field any questions you might have on this legislation. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Do you happen to recall when this original statute was put into place?
The change that required the C plan, we call them, actually occurred last year under House Bill 531, and it was considered an inadvertent, an error on the part of those that drafted that bill. That was the legislation dealing with coal bed methane and the regulations governing that industry. And as a part of that legislation, it was considered to be inadvertent language that was placed in there requiring a C plan for just gas drillers. So we're coming back to make that correction.
Oh, okay. I know some of those statutes are really quite old, you know, regarding oil and gas drilling and development. And there was a time you never said wasn't drilling for oil, you were drilling for oil and gas. And so there was not the distinction made. So I just assume that probably goes back to that as well. Yes. Okay, and are there any questions of the sponsor? Kevin Tabor? You're going to testify today?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Kevin Tabor. I'm the Land and Government Affairs Manager for Union Oil Company here in Anchorage, P.O. Box 196247, Anchorage, Alaska, 99519-6247. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this bill, and would ask that the committee support the bill and as currently written, and ask that they pass it out of the committee without any amendment. As Representative Coring had indicated, this bill will clean up the unintended and inadvertent drafting error that occurred during the shallow gas hearings and legislation and discussion, thereby eliminating the C plan exemption for gas wells. And as you properly asked the question, where did the change occur? It occurred in 531, where we created the definition of of a non-conventional gas as opposed to conventional gas. This will put it back, the statute regulations will be back the way they were beforehand and where they appropriately belong. And that concludes my testimony.
Are there any questions for Kevin? And this had hearings in the House, in your committee, and yes, then ma'am. In what, House Finance?
Yes, ma'am.
And
yeah,
then here you visited resources, and then
that's
this
right.
Committee. Okay. Are there any questions, any more information anyone needs? I know some of our folks have already heard this in resources. Senator Wilken, a motion, please.
Madam Chair, move to report House Bill 97 from committee with individual recommendations attached to zero fiscal.
Are there any objections to moving House Bill 197 with individual signatures and accompanying fiscal notes?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. Appreciate your support of the bill.
Thank you. Barbara, you ready for 156? House Bill 156, which we heard earlier this week, and we had, I think we had a conversation about who votes and who doesn't and how many members we have. And so if you could bring us up to date on what we have. Now, do we have a new document before us?
Yes,
we do.
Madam Chair, I did include a proposed CS. For the record, I'm Barbara Cotting with Representative Holmes' office.
Has the CS been distributed? Do each of you have version S?
Madam Chair, move to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 156, version S by Michelle on 425 as our working document.
And I'll object for explanation. If you'd walk us through that, please, Barbara.
For a simple little bill, this sure has been amended every step of the way. In 2003, the governor moved the Alaska Commission on Aging from Department of Admin to HESS, and actually that has created the need for statutory cleanup, and we're grateful for suggestions you made in the last committee and that have been made all along the way. In addition to removing this seat, which was held by the Department of Administration since they're no longer involved, and changing that to a senior services provider seat, which was really all the service intended to do, we also made changes as a result of Madam Chair's suggestions in HESS to make all 11 members voting members. It just makes sense. There was no reason, just part of the cleanup. And also removed the sections saying that the commission would evaluate grant applications and make grant awards. They had not been doing that, and it just made sense to take it out of there so there'd be no appearance of conflict of interest.
Thank you, Barb. Questions of Ms. Carney? Further objection or further discussion on the bill? Let's see. We have a Senator Dyson.
No, I'm just going to move it.
We need to have Senator Graham on that objection. Let's stand at ease. We just set this aside. House Bill 155. House Bill, thank you, Kim. House Bill 178. Con? Bring before us committee substitute for House Bill 178, State Affairs Region Y.A, sponsored by Representative Olson. And Con, welcome to Senate Finance. If you would present the bill, please.
I guess it is afternoon now.
It is.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Kurt Olson. Now before you today is House Bill 178, Special Request License Plates. The bill is really very simple. It comes down to allowing all license plates to be made available for use on all motor vehicles, with a couple of minor exceptions. Currently, passenger vehicles, motorcycles, non-commercial vans, pickup trucks, and motorhomes are the only vehicles allowed to display most of the non-standard registration plates. Basically, all vehicles except commercial vehicles. Under this bill, all registration plates would be made available for use on all motor vehicles. Certain plates, however, would continue to be available only to those persons qualified to receive them, such as veterans, Purple Heart recipients, or Alaska National Guard personnel. There's obviously specific requirements before those plates can be displayed. Since fees for these plates will be collected in addition to the current commercial vehicle registration fee, the bill will actually bring money into the Division of Motor Vehicles. There has been apparently a little bit of confusion on the fiscal notes. The state affairs version of the bill was adopted in the House, but apparently the finance version of the fiscal note was transmitted. I believe the finance staff has just passed out the state affairs version of the fiscal note so that error can be corrected, and I would ask that the correct fiscal note travel with the bill. And Mr. Chairman, that's all I have today. I believe online, Mr. Dwayne Bannock, the director of the division, is online to answer any technical questions where the committee might have.
Yes, thank you, Conrad. And before we get to Mr. Bannock, so the correct fiscal note is fiscal note one or two?
Is number one.
Number one. So the one dated 3/18 is the correct fiscal note.
Yes, sir.
Okay. With that, any questions of Conrad before we move to Mr. Bannock at DMV? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What, has there been any change to the fees for these vanity license plates?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, no. There's been no change at all. This is strictly making the metal plates available on other vehicles.
No change in the fees at all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks for joining us from DMV. You're signed up to testify. Your testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is Dwayne Bannock. I'm representing the Division of Motor Vehicles
Dwayne, just pull away from that microphone just a little bit, please.
Oh, sorry about that. Is that a little bit better?
Oh, that's much better. Now you're Dwayne. Okay.
Forgive me. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go right ahead.
Thank you again, Senator. I'm Dwayne Bannock with the Division of Motor Vehicles. Thank you for allowing my testimony telephonically. Special thanks to Representative Olson and his staff for the work that they've done on this bill. This bill is a small part of some of the improvements that we're attempting to do at the Division of Motor Vehicles to allow the greater use of vanity or personalized or specialty vehicles to use to go along with these license plates. I think it's a very good bill, and it will go a long way to accomplishing some of the things we're trying to do here. With that, sir, I'd entertain any questions that you might possibly have.
Any questions of Mr. Bannock?
Next question for joining us this afternoon.
Any other questions of the bill's prime sponsor, House Bill 170?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have a position from Department of Public Safety on this bill?
Excuse me. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes, the director of the Division of Motor Vehicles has been in contact with the Department of Public Safety. There doesn't seem to be any problem. Mr. Bannock could probably explain his conversation a little bit better. The difference with the license plates is merely the identification of the vehicle. As far as legibility, anything like that, that's all covered in the basic construction of the plate.
So they have no opposition to this legislation?
I have heard of none. And again, I would ask to also defer that to Mr. Bannock.
Because in the past, when we've diversified and added more and more plates, the department has had reservations about that, about us doing that, and I was wondering if their position has changed.
I'm sorry, Senator Hoffman, through the chair. The bill does not actually add any plates to statute. It just merely makes them available for a larger number of vehicles, a wider range of vehicles, I should say.
Thank you.
We'll take a brief of these. You're discussion with me about the fiscal note, just so we have that on the record and I'm real clear on it, okay?
Yes, Madam Chair. In the process of the bill being passed on the floor of the House, the finance version was passed. I'm sorry, the state affairs version was passed, not the finance version. We've got two fiscal notes, fiscal note one from state affairs, fiscal note two from finance. Unfortunately, the finance fiscal note was apparently transmitted with the state affairs version of the bill. So what I'm asking is that the state affairs version of the bill now travel with the bill.
You want the state affairs version of the fiscal note
of the fiscal
travel note with the bill?
Yes, ma'am. It is fiscal note number one. It should be the correct fiscal note with the bill.
And a question has been raised. If you go on the top half of the fiscal note there, it has an FY06. Total operating, $5,000. And capital expenditures, $5,000. Would that not be $10,000 under the fund source down below, $10,000, instead of $5,000?
Madam Chair, I would send that question to the director of the division, Dwayne Bannock, who
okay.
should still
is
be online.
Okay, is he online? Dwayne, are you still there?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am.
Okay, and in the, do you have the fiscal note in front of you?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
Could you formulate that under fund source, if that should instead be a $10,000 instead of $5,000?
Under the section that says other 1156, where it says $5,000. Your question is, should that be $10,000, taking into mind the $5,000 of operating and the $5,000 of capital? Is that your
Correct.
Question?
Correct.
And the answer is, I'm looking at my admin manager here. Bear with me.
Okay.
The $5,000 that's in capital we are is listed as a capital appropriation as opposed to the operating portion of that $10,000. That's why we're drawing the $5,000 from 1156. We will draw the other $5,000 from our capital expenditure.
And therefore, the total should not be $10,000 in the line that says total?
Madam Chair, I think it's fair to say that it will cost $10,000 in year number one. The fiscal note, however, for capital expenditures does not ask for a fund source from where the capital expenditure comes from, rather only the operating side of that question.
Should it be 5,000 CIP receipts then?
Forgive me.
Capital improvement project receipts? Let us take a look at this, and I think we'll get it corrected where, I mean, it's a rather comparatively insignificant sum, but we would like to pass the correct information on. Is that okay,
okay
with you, Dwayne?
Madam Chair, I want it to be perfect.
Thank you very much. Okay, Conrad, I'm going to pass this off to Tracy and let her work on it while we're finishing the rest of our committee, and then we'll get it on its way.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. If I have no objections, okay? Thank you.
Brief at ease.
I remove my objection, and I assume you finished your discussion on the bill. Yeah. Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, I'd like to report House Bill 156 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection to moving House Bill 156 from committee with individual recommendation and attached fiscal note? It's on its way. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll take a brief at ease, please. The work draft of Senate Bill 46, capital budget, and Ginger, if you would come and present to us, please. Kind of walk us through how this is, the sections
okay,
are.
How it's put together? Sure.
Please, go ahead, Ginger.
Okay, for the record, my name is Ginger Blaisdell. I'm staff to Senator Green. And the work draft that's before you We still have a couple of cleanup amendments that we're trying to get spelling corrections and some of the personal requests from legislators corrected from memos that came in this morning. But the basic flow of this bill is from the introductory page through page 72 are all of the standard capital budget projects. And those are divided out typically by agency, and each project is listed there. Section 4, which begins on page 73, are the projects that are identified in Senate Bill 155. And the introductory language is contingency language. That means if Senate Bill 155 does not pass, these projects would be funded from the general fund rather than the permanent fund earnings reserve. And that section goes from page 73 through page 88. Actually, the only difference that you'll notice in this bill compared to SB 155 is that section 2 in SB 155 has just a general appropriation that says $141 million goes to school maintenance projects. And in this bill, each project by school name is broken out, so you can actually see which school is receiving those projects.
So that goes on and on and
on. It does go on.
Just one line. Yeah.
Right.
So that's good for members, too, who may have a question about where those projects are and how their schools are being impacted in their district.
Right. The school list, for the most part in here, addresses every single school that was scored by the Department of Education and put on their maintenance list. So, mm-hmm. And then there are a few others that have been added. On page 89, section 6 is, these are projects that would be appropriated from the Alaska Capital Income Fund. And that is the interest earnings of the Amaretta Hess portion of the permanent fund. And there are a couple of adjustments in here. I got an old version of lists, and that one is going to be corrected.
What page is that?
That is on page 89, section 6 on page 89. Most of these are the governor's transportation initiatives and roads to resources. And then starting with section 7, still on 89, and it goes for quite a few pages. It's standard language that we usually have in every capital bill. It's federal program receipts allows the LBNA committee to hear federal program receipts and some other state funds. And just a few other standard pieces of language. And this also begins the start of the supplemental portion of the budget. And those are the projects that were originally requested in, I don't remember if it's, I think it's SB 98.
97 or 98?
Yes, SB 98. I couldn't remember if it was an S or an H.
97.
Okay. And you will notice that on page 94, we do have the gas pipeline portion that's been listed back in there as it was vetoed in the fast track supplemental earlier. And then starting on page 104, section 36, that is the beginning of reappropriations. And they are listed by House District, and those are all the reappropriations that each member brought to me. Most of those are projects that were highlighted to the members from the Department of Commerce for their community projects, and the reappropriations, how those work.
And that's the traditional procedure for any money that has not been used.
That is money that was appropriated in an earlier fiscal year and is reappropriated for use into a following fiscal year, or it might be reappropriated for a different use entirely.
Okay.
So some of them are scope of project changes, some of them are extended lapse dates, and some of them are just moving the money from one place to another.
It goes across, pretty much across the state, and every district probably has something going on that they have heard about, or the department has requested that it, a change be made, that be included.
Yeah, all of those that start with House District are typically the ones that are outlined from the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Okay, thank you.
I did, just for a clarification of effective dates and how all the pieces work, there were a few supplemental or reappropriation items that were in the supplemental, and those were just moved into the reappropriation section. So they kind of go in big groups together now. And then just the last few pages are contingency language saying that if the Senate Bill 155 doesn't pass, then money would be appropriated through this mechanism. Otherwise, it would not be double appropriated. And also with the Amaretta Hess interest earnings. So there's no duplicate appropriation happening between this bill and any others that may pass. And then lapse dates, effective dates, and that is the sum total of the bill.
Generally, except for probably the interest from Amaretta Hess being used in this, this would be pretty much in line with a typical annual budget as far as fund sources and...
Fund sources, everything, it's very, very traditional, how they've been used, the same way that they've been used in the past. We kind of tried to follow past precedents as much as possible in everything.
I know that you and I, in looking at it since this morning, had highlighted some things. I don't know if they've been changed in that or if they're still subject to change
in this direction. In this version, nothing's been changed. You'll notice there's a few typos. There's a couple of numbers where maybe we dropped a zero or something.
Four.
Yeah. And those corrections are being made, and Ledge Legal is hoping to have an adoptable CS version ready for hopefully for tomorrow.
So as you look over the document that you have before you or the draft, you may spot something that one of us might not have spotted quite so easily, and you may want to bring it to our attention. And because with this much many pages and entries, it's pretty easy to find something that needs to be corrected.
Right. Actually, in my outline to Ledge Legal, there are only 10 items that I'm requesting to have corrected in the bill.
Okay.
And then at Legislative Finance, there have been a number of personal legislative requests where they've changed projects or small dollar amounts, and so Ledge Finance is changing some of those at the request of each legislator. And those are the only changes that I see coming. So this is pretty close to what it will look like tomorrow.
Any questions? Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, do we have a total?
Pardon me?
A total?
Oh. Less than Bethel is getting. I know that.
It could be adjusted downwards.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I'm looking on page 91. Line 10 through 13.
91.
Yeah, section 12.
1. 11 through 13 or 10 through 13?
Lines 12 and 13.
Oh, 12 and 13. Oh, excuse me. Mm-hmm.
I guess that means what I think it does?
No. That is standard language. That's in every piece of legislation. That's for both. I can recall it in every bill we have ever passed that has that allowance for vessels, for marine vessels, and for, the vessels are in 14 and 15. And so, because very often in the past, I think this is how many of the things they trade, they discard, they retrofit, they put pieces and parts together. That's what that means.
And isn't a loophole that something very large could fly through?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Absolutely it is?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Ginger.
The average amount for the sale and resale of vessels, either in public safety or in fishing game, is typically $250,000 to $300,000 a year.
It wasn't the vessels I was interested in, but thank you.
Right, but that's typically what those paragraphs deal with.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On the same point, I guess one of the concerns I have is why don't we close that loophole?
Because in the course of a year, as an airplane owner, I'm sure you know very often what's necessary in your fleet, that one needs to be discarded, and you discard that and or sell parts and use some of the income from that to either rehab or refurbish another plane or helicopter or whatever. And this is very, if you go back through all the budgets from the years I've been here, this is identical language.
I'm fully aware of that, Madam Chairman, and the concern that I have is that as aircraft get sold and new ones bought, there becomes a situation where all of a sudden you've got to take care of these things, and we get requests, as was pointed out, about a hangar that keeps building on itself, and once you put a hangar big enough, then you've got to fill it, and you've got to have another hangar, and so that the progression downhill that I consider, I find somewhat disagreeable.
Well, are you seeing something in here? Are you saying that if we continue to increase the number in the fleet, you need a hangar? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that there was a request by the Department of Public Safety for a hangar that was in excess of $6 million with the idea that they're going to fill that hangar, and once you fill the hangar, then you're going to want to build another hangar. And so
do you see the request for $6 million in here for a hangar?
What I see here is the mentality that put on that absurd amount request, Madam
Senator Chairman. Olson, is $6 million in here for a hangar?
No, what I see is the mental set that mental makeup.
I'm not going to go there, because this is the same language that's been in there ever since I've been here. This is typical language, and it allows them to do what this administration has continued to do, is to reduce the number of crafts and marine vessels we have in the state currently. And some would complain, is not enough. I know you don't join that group, but some would say there's been too much reduction in the number of craft. Are there any other questions? There'll be a great, we'll be look through these, get the information back to us, and hopefully soon enough we'll be back at this. Ginger.
If you have some technical corrections that need to be made to the bill, if they can come in before 6 o'clock so that Ledge Legal can try and work that into the budget, just kind of cleaning up anything that doesn't look right. If I can get them before 6 o'clock, that would be very helpful so that they can run the bill overnight and it'd be ready for tomorrow. And then if there are significant changes, you can work with Legislative Legal or your own staff to present amendments to the budget. And that would be tomorrow.
Any other questions on that? Senator Hoffman.
Mine won't be much. It's a zero here and a zero there.
Just a zero here and a zero there. I appreciate that. Our calculator goes the other way, however. just to refer back just for a moment to House Bill 178, there'll be a corrected fiscal note, and we'll get that before us tomorrow. We'll take a brief at ease.
Lots of towns scattered all over.